They're in a one-goal game with the Winnipeg Jets. First place, President's Trophy winning Winnipeg Jets. The Blackhawks pull their goalie left. They're down by a goal, like a minute and a half left. And Bedard has this really nice exit pass to... He's trying to break in, and the Jets know that he's the number one guy on the ice, so they try to take him out of the play. So they literally have three guys closing on him, and he makes the right play, and he hits Pertuzzi wide open in the wing. It's just him and a defenseman, and they have like a rush coming in, and the motherfucker dumps it in. I think Davidson's actually doing a pretty solid job acquiring assets, making smart trades. I don't think he's really signed a bad contract. Nazar might be the first one, but you know, this is kind of like you have to look down 3 years and see how this ages with Nazar.
Yes and no, but I think that you can do much better than Tyler Bertuzzi on the first line, like anybody better. Welcome to the Checking From Behind podcast. I'm your host, Zach, as always, joined by my co-host, Preston. And in today's episode, we don't have a ton of talk about because, again, we're so in the dog days. However, though, we're getting through it. I hope you guys are getting through it. And we finally had some news that broke earlier this Thursday afternoon. Frank Nazar signed a 7x$6.59 million contract extension with the Chicago Blackhawks. This feels a little premature to me. I would have waited even like a couple years to give him a deal like this. Maybe sign him to a bridge after his ELC is done. But I'm not a fan of this at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You have a guy who's played 56 career NHL games, spent the majority of this year in the NHL. He did play some AHL games. I had 26 points, 53 games. You know, I was trying to think maybe, you know, he's like an analytical darling, right? Maybe that's the case. Pull up his stats on Evolving Hockey. Look at his player card. Doesn't really do him any favors here. I will give him the benefit of the doubt that he was a rookie on a really bad team that had really big issues defensively, and they couldn't really score. And he was in the 35th percentile offensively, which I don't think is that bad, honestly, for a rookie on the Chicago Blackhawks.
And if you want to look at the positives with his analytics, his goals above replacement and expected goals above replacement in offense, they were above zero. So that's a positive.
On that team, that is a positive.
Yeah, it is. Outside of Connor Bedard, they don't got anybody at all.
Yeah, so... You know, I've no issue. The money and the term is fine. It's just I'm with you. I don't see with you, Zach, like on this. I don't see a rush. Mm-hmm. I don't see why the Blackhawks need to do this right now.
There's two things that's going to happen with this contract. Either A, in a couple years, it's going to look like a steal because I think Frank Nazar does have a ton of potential in the world. The Blackhawks wouldn't give him the steal if they didn't think he was that guy. Or two, it's going to blow up in their face. And we talked about in the last episode where a lot of these teams, they want to get ahead of these contracts so they don't have to pay these players an extra million or $2+ million when they become good and stuff like that. And I totally get that. But, I mean, the guy has 56 career games played. This isn't like some 23-year-old in like a Mason McTavish example or a Marco Rossi example where they've shown you that they can be in a very good player in the league and they have some NHL games under their belt. This dude is coming off of his rookie year. He played 20 or something games in the AHL. Mm-hmm. And overall, I don't really see the thing with needing to get him locked up long-term. If you know, thinking that you were going to pay him more money down the road, I don't see him as more as like an $8 million career player in my eyes. Now, granted, could he become a very good top line or second line guy? Of course he can. But I just don't know about this right now.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned like teams like to get ahead of this kind of stuff, you know, avoid paying the extra if they don't have to. But, you know, I look at a team like the Blackhawks and they have a ton of cap space. Mm-hmm. I think they either have the most or the second most, I believe, in the league. Oh, sorry, third most. The only two teams that have more cap space than them are the Ducks and the Sharks. So it's not like they don't have money to spend. Would it really hurt them that much if they had to spend an extra million? Like, let's say Frank plays out last year of his ELC. He has maybe like 40 to 50 points this year, right? Has a really good first full season in the NHL. And then that's when I would start having these discussions about like a long-term deal with this kind of money, make $6-7 million, you know, show some more consistency. He needs to play more. That's
yeah,
pretty much the gist of what I'm saying.
I don't disagree with you. And like, you can make an argument that with some of these other teams, like you look at the Ducks, for example, right? They have a bunch of young players that are already on their NHL roster that, you're going to eventually have to pay with the Blackhawks. Outside of Connor Bedard, like, you're not really going to have to pay these guys, like, a ton of money. And I know they have some guys coming up through the system. I know they have Anton Frandell, and they have Levchinov on the blue line. Mm-hmm. But still, though, it's not like you have four or five different players that you're going to have to pay $7, $8, $9 million+.
No, the only guy that's
going
to get A+ is Bedard. That's it.
Yeah, correct. And I think that Levchinov and Frandell are both eventually going to break the $8 million mark. But that's like 3 years
down
the road. Yeah,
that's years down the road. You're not even worried about that right now. So, I'm kind of interested to see what they do with Connor Bedard in this contract because, you know, if he has a kind of another season like this where, you know, he's not the problem there. It's what's around him, but do you give him that 8-year deal, like that max contract that you can get him? I mean, obviously they're going to try to, but what's that money look like? Are you still banking on him? Like, okay, he's going to be like Connor McDavid or Nathan McKinnon in this league and be like an absolute superstar. Or do you just give him a bridge deal?
I don't give him a bridge. I get him locked up. He's your franchise superstar. And now, granted, I don't necessarily see a way right now where he becomes like McDavid and McKinnon or Kucherov or Pastrnak or any of these stars right away, because we saw, for example, Nathan McKinnon. I think his path with Connor Bedard, those two, Connor Bedard is on more on a projected path of Nathan McKinnon than McDavid. You look at McKinnon, he didn't really break out until like his fourth season.
A great rookie season, McKinnon.
Yeah, that's true. And then his next couple seasons, he really dipped in production. And we look at it with Connor Bedard. Connor Bedard had a great rookie season. I don't think it was as good as Nathan McKinnon's, correct me if I'm wrong, but he still had a good one. People are saying that Connor Bedard had a sophomore slump. No, he didn't. Like, if you watch,
I don't think it's all him. Yeah, he makes some mistakes. He's a young player, but just look at what's around him. There's this clip that I will always bring up when someone mentions something like that. They're in a one goal game with the Winnipeg Jets, first place President's Trophy winning Winnipeg Jets. The Blackhawks pull their goalie left. They're down by a goal, like a minute and a half left. And Bedard has this really nice exit pass he's trying to break in. And the Jets know that he's the number one guy on the ice. So they try to take him out of the play. So they literally have three guys closing on him. And he makes the right play and he hits Pertuzzi wide open in the wing. It's just him and a defenseman. And they have like a rush coming in. And the motherfucker dumps it in. With an empty net. The Jets immediately clear the puck and score in the empty net. Like, what do you want him to do there? He made the right play. That's not his fault.
And then, you know what? His analytics and his plus minus are all going to go down because
-1. He's technically was on the ice for that goal against, even though it's an empty net goal. I don't really think those fucking
matter.
Should count as much. Yeah. But if you watch that, it's clearly, what was he supposed to do?
You can't do anything if you're him.
No, and that's why he gets frustrated, because I think he feels a lot of pressure on himself to be able to put that kind of production up and put the team on his back. And, like, I get you're good enough to do that, but you don't need to do that, dude. You're 20 years old. You need to, like, round out your defensive game, because that is an issue.
His defensive game
is a legitimate problem.
It is an issue. He's in the 15th percentile in defense, and the second percentile in defense. Yeah. Jesus Christ. His expected goals above replacements at like 8, whatever. I'm interested to see something real quick, though. I'm going to look at where are okay skater tables, because I found out how to find out war on here. I'm assuming it's high. Oops, wrong one. Let's see. Bedard, didn't save, I guess. Okay. Bedard's war was 0.3, so okay, that's not great. Either way, though, sorry, I didn't mean to do that. We've kind of dissed on Steve Yzerman a little bit, but the one guy who I think that we should be kind of, I guess, dissing is Kyle Davidson, who has failed to build around Connor Bedard. And this isn't some, like, long-term project anymore. Like, okay, I get you want to be patient with this, okay? But you haven't even, like, almost made an effort on going to try to acquire talent. Like,
I still think they're at that point yet, though.
Give Connor Bedard somebody. Somebody.
I understand. Well, Zach, you got to remember, they lucked into getting him.
That's also true.
And I get when you get a player like that in the draft lottery, kind of gifted to you, it kind of puts pressure on the team to kind of get the rebuild and the kickstart. But if you just look at their roster, like, there's still so many holes, and the free agent classes haven't been great the last couple of years, just to fill that out. And I think Davidson's actually doing a pretty solid job acquiring assets, making smart trades. I don't think he's really signed a bad contract. Nazar might be the first one, but you know, this is kind of like you have to look down 3 years and see how this ages with Nazar.
Yes and no, but I think that you can do much better than Tyler Bertuzzi on the first line. Like anybody better. Anybody.
Well, they didn't think he'd be that bad of a fit on the team. They were looking for like a solid winger to play with Connor Bedard on the first line because he doesn't have anybody. And right now you're not going to get a big name free agent unless you overpay because just of the way the team is, you know, you're not going to probably be a playoff team. I think they're still looking for a long-term goalie. I think Spencer Knight could be the answer.
Yeah.
But we'll see. He's going to be the full-time starter this year. So I think it's clearly his net to lose. But that defense core is still a mess. They still have a ton of young players.
I think it has a potential to, in 3, 4, 5 years, be top 10 in the league.
Yeah, but this is going to take a few years. Rome wasn't built in a day. I think the Blackhawks are going to be bad again this year. I still think that defensive core is too young, not good enough, too raw. They don't have enough offensive firepower right now. So I think, yeah, you're going to see another year where Connor Bedard maybe, I wouldn't say struggle. I think he's going to have 70 points this year plus. I think he'll be, I'm not worried about Connor Bedard from an offensive standpoint. Yeah. It's just, how does he deal with all the losing? Because, you know, losing sucks. He clearly doesn't like to lose. But, I mean, that's the case with when you get drafted into a situation like that. Like they had fully tore it down. And, you know, if they would have got Bedard like a year or two into their rebuild, okay, that they would have been right there to go. But they pretty much got him as soon as they started the rebuild when they shipped off Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves walked. That's when they really started the bulk of it.
Yeah. And going to the Connor Bedard stuff, like you can look at his defense, it is pretty bad. It's,
honestly, I expected him to be bad though. He's a young player on like the worst defensive team in the league.
Well, also, when your team can't score outside of you, you kind of have no choice but to just go all out offensively.
You're always playing from behind. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm still not super high on anything. But again, I guess wait 3 years if it's still like this. If they're, you know, in the Red Wings spot in 3 years, like cool, whatever. Yeah. But I just want to see more aggressiveness from Davidson and whether it's going out. And I get it's very, very hard to go out and not only draft well, but also make the smart and right trades for your team, not only at that time, but also in the future and also signing these guys. And I get having Connor Bedard now is not just going to, you know, make like a Mitch Marner be like, you know what, I'll come to Chicago for $14 million. It's not how it works, right? So I'll give Davidson the benefit of the doubt, but I just don't think that he's doing anything to support Connor Bedard.
Well, I am just saying on paper right now, if things stay the way it is, the 2026 free agency class might be the best free agent class ever.
How many, first off, yes. How many of those actually sign extensions before?
McDavid will sign an extension. Eichel will sign an extension. I think Kyle Connor will sign an extension. Those players, for sure, cross them off the list. I think Kaprizov could be available. And I think if you are the Chicago Blackhawks and Kirill Kaprizov somehow makes it to UFA, you throw the house at him. Because you're looking for an elite player to play with Connor Bedard's wing. That I don't see anyone more perfect than that.
Now, if they somehow got Kaprizov, I'm clapping my hands for Kyle.
Because he's worth $14 million a year.
Listen, I don't care if Kaprizov sits here and he's like, give me 15 and a half to come to Chicago. Fucking do it. I don't care. Like, that's just how good of a player Kaprizov is. I do think Kaprizov does stay in Minnesota. And
I think like certain guys like McDavid, Eichel, Kyle Connor, like those guys are not hitting the market. I think those guys will be signed. I think there is a chance though with Kaprizov.
I think If there's a chance, it's a very slight chance. I think
it's higher than 25%. I'll say that.
I think it's lower than 25%. I'll give it like 15.
But you have other UFAs that are going to be. I think Panarin will be available. Does he go back to Chicago? Marty Natchez, I think, would be a good fit there too. Literally any winger that's good is going to be a fit for that team. Adrian Kempe is. He's going to be a UFA. Alex Tuck.
Mm-hmm. But I know that
like there's going to be some good players available.
I know with with Natchez, I'm assuming he's just going to want to be a playoff team unless the Blackhawks, again, offer him more money. I know Alex Tuch, he's probably going to sign an extension.
I know. All I'm saying is just on paper right now, if this free agency holds up. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that would be sick.
I get where you're coming from. It's like, okay, most of these guys aren't going to make the UFA, because but at least I think a few of them will.
That's a good point.
I think this Panarin and Natchez will definitely be available, though.
I think Panarin will 1,000% be available. I think Natchez has a higher shot to be available than not available.
I think Natchez is going to go to UFA. I think there's a good chance he stays in Colorado. I think he just wants to see what kind of offers are out there. I think that
he's always wanted to test the market. Yeah. That was his goal since he was in Carolina. That's why he wanted to sign a 2-year deal. It wasn't that he didn't want to. Oh, granted, I don't think he. You know,
I don't think he would have stayed in Carolina if he hit the market.
No. But
I think there's a decent chance he stays in Colorado, though.
I think there's a greater than 50% shot that he stays in Colorado, because I mean, you get to play with McKinnon on the first line, McCarr, like that's all great and dandy. But I'm excited for that. We do this every single summer, not just us, but everybody in general is like, look how good this free agency class is. And then everybody,
you have to take it for what it is, because like, true. Let's say something crazy happens and somehow like McDavid and Eichel are free agents. Now, Eichel, 1,000,000% is not going to be available. There's one guy I bet $1,000,000 on to not be a free agent to be Jack Eichel. I think they'll get a deal done before training camp starts.
Mm-hmm.
I think as soon as they're back in person, I think that's going to be Vegas' number one priority, just getting him signed.
I'm with you. You want to know a guy that if he does hit the open market that I could look at a team like Chicago going after? Adrian Kempe. I think
LA will retain him as well, but
If he hits the open market, I think there's going to be a lot of teams interested, especially either like the teams like San Jose or Chicago or the top tier contenders that have some cap space to go out.
He's gonna have to make a choice. Does he want to go to a place where he can like maybe finally get over that hump in the playoffs? I mean, maybe the Kings finally make a deep run this year, or does he just take the money and run?
Right. I mean, a team's gonna offer him on the open market probably $7 to $8 million.
Oh, easy. Yeah. I think we'll get 8+, especially with the way the cap's going up. It wouldn't shock me if he got 9+.
Yeah, nine plus, yeah. I wouldn't go as far as 10, but I think
between he'll get good offers.
He's
going to be a very attractive player to a lot of teams, especially.
He will be.
And the Blackhawks are going to go after any good winger that they can get their hands on.
Yeah, and you know what? If Davidson goes out and starts signing guys, and now you don't want to go out and just try to sign.
No, it has to be a good fit. Yeah,
rebuild, right? Like. We've seen it with teams before where, like, we saw – I don't want to always bring up the Sabres, but we saw it with Murray when he first started the rebuild in Buffalo. He tried to sign his way out of the rebuild and speed it up that way. It blew up in his face fucking completely. So you don't want to go out if you're Kyle Davidson and the Blackhawks and being like, let's give $8 million to him. Let's give $9 million to him. Let's do a 5x6 to him. Like, and then in 3 years, all the players are regressing because they're in their mid-30s. Now you're in the New York Rangers situation, but 10 times worse than that. So
yeah, I agree. It has to be kind of the right fit. Like a one player, though, that just screams like this is way too obvious for it to actually happen. Just Panarin going back to Chicago to play the last few years of his career.
I wouldn't thought if Panarin went back to Chicago on like
a – He still can play at a really high level. He's been there before. He likes playing in those big markets. Mm-hmm. He's going to have a really good center to play with him. I think that just makes sense to me.
If you're the Blackhawks, you offer him like a 2x11 or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. 2 or 3 year deal. Yeah, I think that's more than fair.
I'm assuming Panarin would ask for a 3-year deal.
Unless he like falls off a cliff this year in production, he'll get like 10, 11 million plus. Yeah.
Unless he like, because he had over 100 points last season. Unless he gets like only 70 points this season, he's getting his money.
So I would say even it have to be like 50 or something. Like he'd have to have a catastrophically bad season for his terms for him to like really tank his value.
Yeah, which I would be very shocked that if it happened.
I agree.
All right, quick time out before we get back to the action. This episode is brought to you by Dubby Energy. Listen, hockey's fast, and whether you're breaking down plays, yelling shoot from the couch, or just getting in a workout, you've got to stay sharp. That's where Dubby comes in. Clean energy with zero sugar, no crash, no artificial flavors or dyes. Just 150 milligrams of caffeine per serving, about 2 cups of coffee's worth to keep you locked in and ready to go. Personally, I use Dubby before the gym, on the ice, listen even when prepping content for the pod. If you need that extra spark, whether you're grinding through work, lifting, or lacing up the skates, Dubby's got you covered. Head over to Dubby.gg and use code CFBPOD for 10% off your order. That's Dubby.gg, code CFBPOD for 10% off your order. Fuel up, stay locked in, and let's get back to the episode. Let's hop over to some more news. The U.S. Men's Olympic Orientation Camp roster, or I guess invitation, ended up getting released. And there's, what, 44 total players on here?
A lot of guys, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to read off every single name because that'd take about 25 minutes. However, though, you want to know the one thing I am intrigued at? The goaltenders. We have the three goaltenders, Hellebuck, Ottinger, and Swayman.
We already have two of them. I think this is really a battle for who's going to be number three.
And then Joey Decor is the fourth guy.
Yeah.
He
was pretty solid last year in Seattle. Yeah. I think there's might be a legitimate battle for who's going to be the third goalie. Obviously, Hellebuck and Ottinger are going to be on Team USA. That's not a question. Mm-hmm. Those are the two best goalies. I think Swayman and Decor are going to have a real battle for that third spot unless, one of them has a really good camp and then, we'll see how the season starts. Mm-hmm. I think right now it's Swayman's to lose. But I think Decor can make it interesting.
I agree with you. I think right now, unless Swayman shits the bed again this season, which I don't, mm-hmm. I don't think he will. But again, crazier shits happen. I think it's his to lose. But I think Joey Decor can make it interesting. And with just the overall camp of the invitations, I know a lot of people are pissed off. Canadians fans specifically are pissed off that Lane Hutson isn't on it. Listen, I think that – wait, Lane Hudson's American, right?
He's American.
He is. Okay, I want to make sure I'm not mixing up the Canada side. A lot of people are pissed off. Okay.
Yeah, he's American, yeah.
Okay, cool. Just want to make sure. All right, continue on with my point. Lane Hutson, a lot of Habs fans are pissed off that he's not invited to the Men's Olympic orientation camp. However, though, I'll give you a couple things. His defense blows. I think Team Canada would honestly actually rather have Lane Hutson on Team USA.
I think you have to look at it in terms like best on best. So like, let's say you're in a mm-hmm. gold medal game against Team Canada and the Hudson's going out there against Sidney Crosby or Connor McDavid, a Brad Marchand or any of those, Nathan MacKinnon, do you feel comfortable for him defending them in a gold medal game? No, I do not.
Nope.
Yeah. His offensive game is good. I'll give him that, but I think he's got to round up. He has to be more of a two-way player. I'm not saying he has to be like a top 20 defensive player and then still be top 10 offensive to be considered. Like, his defense just needs to get a little bit better.
Yeah, it doesn't have to, be skyrocketed this season. Mm-hmm. It's a developmental curve. And I guarantee you if his rookie season was the same as Luke Hughes, Lane Hudson would be on this list. Almost guaranteed.
Well, my issue, too, is you look at the defensemen, and two guys that are obviously going to be on the team. Quinn Hughes is already named to the team. Mm-hmm. And then Zach Werenski, you kind of already have two offensive-minded defensemen.
Yeah.
Do you want to carry a third like that into a game who's a defensive liability? Because Quinn and Zach Werenski can play defense.
Yeah. You have other guys, too, like Adam Fox, offensive, mm-hmm. but he's a great two-way guy. Brock Faber, same thing. Noah Hannafin, same thing.
McAvoy, you have Slavin, a pure shot-down defenseman. Each guy's going to have a different role, and I just don't see what role Hudson would fill on this team.
Yeah, I like that point because with the Olympic, it's different than the foreign nations mm-hmm. in terms of you're going against, 10 nations and right now.
Yeah, it's a much longer tournament, too. Yeah,
it is, too, and if Lane Hudson, if he was better defensively, sure, I can see him on this list. But the fact that you already have guys that are like Lane Hudson but are much better defensively, and you already have a guy like Luke Hughes that is kind of in the same situation but better overall mm-hmm. player than Lane Hudson.
He just has more experience, yeah.
Right, you have that. So I think that there's a few guys on this list that are kind of just throw-ins to fill the camp, and I don't think necessarily.
I think it's just more for the reserves because mm-hmm. I think it's pretty obvious, especially on the defensive side, who's going to be on the team. I think the forward group is going to be a little bit more interesting for Team USA.
Yeah, it is
very top heavy. The bottom six is going to be really interesting to me to see where they fill out. But look at the defense. Obviously Quinn Hughes, Zach Werenski going to be on the team. I think Slavin's a lock. Fox is a lock. Mm-hmm. Brock Faber played in the Four Nations faceoff. I thought he played really well. And then that sixth spot on is where it kind of gets interesting. Charlie McAvoy, sorry, has also been named on the team already. So that's six already. I think Slavin has to be on the team. He's just pure shutdown defenseman. You need a guy like that in your team. And then they'll probably have 8 or 9 defensemen total. So do you want more younger players?
I would go Jake Sanderson.
Yeah, Sanderson, I think, was really impressive also in the four. Because mm-hmm. you got to also check it. Four Nations faceoff is kind of like a bit of a mini tryout for Team USA. Because mm-hmm. for a lot of the top, this was a lot of guys' first time really putting on like their international jersey against in a pure best on best tournament ever.
Yeah, outside of a few guys up in the yeah. four group, like a lot of these guys, this was their first time.
They played in the World Championships, but that's not the same as the Olympics.
No, it's not even close to the same as the Olympics. Like the Four Nations was kind of like a taste of what mm-hmm. it would be. You're going up against a lot of the same players in the Olympics, and you go over to the four group, like you said, the top six, even probably the top nine is a lock, but then you get to like that fourth line and like the mm-hmm. extras. Like you have Chris Kreider, JT Miller, you have Alex Tuck. Who else am I missing? Patrick Kane.
Trocheck.
So right now, those are five guys right there that could realistically.
And Brock Nelson as well. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah,
there's a bunch of guys like as the GM and the coach of Team USA. I think this is where the really NCBD's camp is interesting, is because these are all like mostly star players, right? And they're used to be kind of being the guy. How many guys are going to welcome just being like a role player on a team, right?
You know what? This might sound a little crazy. I think Patrick Kane will probably be on the team. I think he will.
I know he wasn't
on my roster prediction last week, but that was before this orientation camp thing. And then also, you want to know who I think might have a good role, and this is not being biased. I think Alex Tuck is a good shot.
He's a very
good penalty killer.
I know a lot of people like want Tage Thompson on the team. I think Tuck is a better fit for the team than Tage.
I don't hate that. I think Tuck is a better fit than both Caulfield and Tage. I know Tage will be on the team.
I don't think Tage is a lock.
I think that there's no way that you can't have a guy like Tage on the team. And
let's look at the four, because like the forwards that are already named, Austin Matthews, Eichel. Was Jack Hughes already named to the team?
No, he was not.
Yeah, Matthews, Eichel. I'm trying to think of the other guys.
Matthews,
Brady Tkachuk and Matthew Tkachuk.
Yeah.
So those four, then Hughes and McAvoy were the two defensemen. Yep. So, yeah, both the Tkachuks. I mean, we'll see if Matthew is healthy enough for the Olympics. He's always dealing with injuries. I know he might miss part of the beginning of the season. We'll see how he is when he can get back on the ice. But I mean, like, Dylan Larkin will be on the team. I think Matt Boldy will be on the team. Brian Russ is an interesting name. I think he'd be a good bottom six guy.
Yeah.
Kyle Connor, he'll be on the team. I think Clayton Keller will also be on the team. Like, you have a lot of these really high-end players, of course. It's going to be tough to make these decisions. Like, a lot of people were, like, really complaining. Like, why is Chris Kreider on the Four Nations face-off? And, I mean, he didn't really play much in it. But he was kind of that fourth-line role. He's a good net first presence. You know, he's good on special teams. Those kinds of guys that, you know, might not light the lamp like they used to, or might not ever have been like a pure goal scorer. Like Connor Garland's an interesting name on this list to me as well. Like, there's a lot of this is a really good mix of young and older players, different kind of roles. And I think Shane Pinto's another interesting name on there. Nazar, which we were just talking about, only played 56 games. He got an invite to the USA Olympic camp. So maybe the Blackhawks are on to something.
Yeah, I guess other people around the league think that he's going to be a really good player. So
yeah.
I think you brought up Connor Garland, for example. And if I can see a way that Garland and Tuck both make the team simultaneously, and again, it comes back to the penalty kill and the defense up front, because
Connor Garland's kind of like a Swiss Army knife. He can play any role you need him to play.
He can play in the power play too if you really needed him to too. Like, he can do everything. And same with, I guess, Tuck in a way. But I mean,
he's a power forward, but he's good on the penalty kill. Like, he's a good all around player. Yeah.
Yeah. I am very intrigued to see which way they go with this. If they're like, okay, we're going to get, you know, the top nine is going to be all skill forwards, and our bottom, you know, fourth line is like, okay, we have a bunch of power forwards or grinders that are going to really play mostly on the penalty kill and play in the defensive zone, and, you know, give us like those minutes where, okay, let's go grind out something even in the offensive zone, work the corners, work down low, tire the guys out a little bit too. It could be a little bit of stuff like that as well.
Yeah, I mean, these are going to be some tough decisions to make for Chris Drury, the GM of the team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't envy him, because, I mean, this is a really talented group, and you know, I trust him to make the right decision. I mean, I still think it's going to be a little bit. I'm really excited for the Olympics. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see best on best in a full tournament. I'm going to try to watch as many games as I can. I know there's a bit of a time difference in Italy, but I'm super excited. I'm super amped, and you know, it's starting to finally feel real that like NHL players are back in the Olympics, or like talking about like Team USA's makeup. It's cool.
It is really cool. I fucking barely remember the 2014 Olympics for Kyle.
Main highlight I remember was TJ Soshi. That's about it. I don't even remember who won. I think Canada won gold again that year, but it was also a crazy game between Latvia and Canada year too in the playoffs. That game was nuts.
2-1 game. I remember you told me in the last episode, two episodes ago, whatever it was.
Yeah.
55 shots on goal to 16.
Yeah. It took Shea Weber with like 100-mile-per-hour slap shot to finally take the lead. And they were acting, when they scored the goal, they're acting like they won the fucking gold medal.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Oh. Let's hop over. Do you want to do teams with the most pressure this season?
I mean, sure.
Because I have three teams down. If you
one team's an easy team. This team has pressure on them every year, the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
Until they win even when they win the Stanley Cup, there's going to be pressure on them. It's like, okay, go do it again.
Go do it again. Go win. Yeah. You know what? Go win three straight, for crying out loud. Like,
yeah.
It's just, I look at the Toronto pressure. It's not really the team or the NHL media. It's the Toronto media so hard on them.
I mean,
like,
they've just been kind of stuck for a while. You know, they make it back to the second round this year. They take Florida to 7. Arguably should have won the series. They kind of blew it. They had a 2-0 series lead. Right? Yeah, they had a 2-0 series lead, right?
They against who?
Florida.
Yeah, they had a 2-0 series lead.
And they kind of had a chance to take a 3-0 lead, and they lost the game in overtime, and I think they kind of got in their own heads. Maybe with Mitch Marner gone, it takes a little bit less pressure. I think it's just going to put more pressure on Matthews, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I think I'll dive into this more in our next episode next week, but I think that Matthews and Nylander are going to have to prove they can win without Marner. And we're not talking about just become this good regular season team, but okay, you had the core four broken up. He goes to a juggernaut in Vegas. Can you guys withstand that and go and make a playoff run? Whether you guys get to the finals or the Eastern Conference finals, whatever it is, I think that anything obviously less than a Stanley Cup win is a failure if I'm a Maple Leafs fan. And
that's been the case for the last few years. Yeah.
I mean, I plus another question mark is Matthews has to stay on the ice, man. I know he was ranked in NHL Network's top 10 center list, like 7th or something. At this point, that's kind of underrating him. I get he was hurt last season, but I mean, he scored 69 goals the last season he was healthy.
I think they're just basing it off of last season.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, he is a top 5 center, arguably top 3 in my opinion in the league. But
dude, if they get a healthy Matthews with Nylander, dude, I think that the sky's the limit for this team again.
Yeah, but I mean, the pressure is going to be on them until they finally get it done. And then once if they finally do win the Stanley Cup, then the next year is like, okay, do it again.
Yeah, it just sucks because for them, they're in the tough Atlantic Division. You have to face Florida at some point in the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't know if they could beat them. I really don't.
I don't know either. But then if they're sitting here in the spot that the Hurricanes are in, it's like, Eastern Conference Finals. Like, we're talking about, can this team get over the hump? We're kind of talking about them like Carolina right now, for being honest.
I don't know. I think Toronto's always going to have more pressure on them than almost any other team.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think with Carolina, I think you're getting to that point where I'm kind of getting – I don't really care about them anymore.
Hater.
Like – a comparison I drew them to a few weeks ago was they're like the Buffalo Bills in the NHL. They make it every year. They just cannot get over the hump. They can't beat Patrick Mahomes, right? And the Hurricanes cannot beat a good goalie.
Yeah, they can't.
It was either Igor Shesterkin or Sergei Bobrovsky. It's been their kryptonite the last few years. They just can't get over the hump.
I know you said that you don't care about them. I think they have a ton of pressure on them too, genuinely. That get over the hump and get into the finals. And I know, you know, you can look at this and be like, okay, you have to be Florida. Florida is their Kansas City Chiefs, for being completely honest with you.
It's the whole Eastern Conference Kansas City Chiefs. They are the Chiefs in the NHL right now. Nobody can beat them.
Nobody can.
Yeah.
Like Carolina, they're in a spot where you're in a kind of, you know, easy division in terms of outside of the top three. Like,
I mean, they should win the division this year. I think they're the best team. I think either them or New Jersey will win the division this year. If New Jersey can stay healthy, that's a big what if as well. But yeah, with Carolina, until they finally prove to me that they can actually beat a good team, like deep in the playoffs, I'm not going to really pay much attention to them. That's just me being completely honest.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. You look at a lot of their playoff wins, it's against whether it's a banged up Hurricanes team or whether it's, you know, against, I don't know, a team like Columbus, for example. I know they haven't played in the playoffs, but you guys get the fucking point. They're not like these juggernauts like in the Atlantic Division where Florida has to. They have to beat Tampa Bay, and then they have to beat Toronto, or they have to beat Boston in seven games or six games. They have to come back down 3-1 against Boston. Like, you have Carolina facing, you know, kind of a cakewalk, and then they get into the Eastern Conference Finals. They lose in five or six games because they're not prepared to face a team like Florida or Tampa or whoever it is.
Well, I will say, like, last year for the Hurricanes – like in the first round, yeah, it was kind of they should have beat the Devils. The Devils had like half their team left, but
yeah.
But I will say in the second round, like I thought they were different because they like thoroughly kicked the Capitals' ass. Like they just outplayed them. Like the Caps were a good team, they were healthy, and they just outworked them. They won every like almost every puck battle. Like they were not giving the Capitals an inch.
And I know the Hurricanes are favored in that series, but they like kicked their living shit out of them.
I thought it was going to be closer than it was. I didn't think they would kick the crap out of them like they did.
And honestly, coming out of the series, we're talking about can Carolina at least push Florida to seven games?
Because they had some rest because, you know, Florida and Toronto went seven games, and then they just get their ass kicked by Florida again. At least they won a game this time.
And, yeah, in that game, they literally had to play perfect to win that game.
Yep.
And that was not an easy win. And they have to for a seven-game series. You have to win four of those. That's hard to do.
That's why it's hard to win the Stanley Cup, man. That's what makes what Florida is doing so impressive year after year. And I still think with the way, like, getting Bennett, Ekblad, and Marchand. The Marchand contract is not going to age well. I'll just say that now.
No, it won't.
But for 2 years, they extended their window for at least two more years.
Dude, they could honestly probably pull some shit like Marsh. I don't know, like the Shea Weber stuff or the Carey Price stuff where it's like, okay, we're throwing you on LTIR when the season's up.
I think a team would trade for the contract even though it's not going to age great. But we'll see. We're not really talking about that, but another team I wanted to mention that I think has a ton of pressure on them. You didn't put them on your list. I think this one's fairly obvious too. Is the Edmonton Oilers?
Yeah. Okay. I like that.
You know, back-to-back trips to the Stanley Cup final. I would say they played worse this year than they did last year. And you have Connor McDavid's contract coming up. I think they'll get it done, but the fact that it hasn't been done tells me McDavid's putting pressure on the organization too. Is like, are we going to get over the hump? I don't know if I believe in this organization to get it done. Like, I'm putting the team on my back. Leon's putting the team on his back. Mm-hmm. Where's everybody else?
Yeah, I can see a team like Edmonton with some of the most pressure in the league outside of, honestly, Toronto, for being completely honest with you. I know I didn't have them on the list, but that's besides the point. You look at a guy like McDavid where he's a UFA after this season, and contract talks haven't really started between them. And, of course, everything kicks up starting training camp with people in the building. You know, you don't really want to think about hockey a lot in the offseason, especially a guy like Connor McDavid where – you know,
he's probably still pissed about the Stanley Cup final.
Well, not only that, but also he's not like some third, fourth line guy that's like scratching and clawing to get every ounce.
He'll get whatever he asks for. He's not worried about the money.
Right. He's not worried. He's honestly, if I'm McDavid, I'm not worried about the contract. I want this team to, you know, win a Stanley Cup at the end of the day. Like, if honestly, I've seen some stuff where this is hypothetical. Connor McDavid taking something around Leon Draisaitl of like $14 to $15 million, if that means the Edmonton Oilers end up going out and acquiring more talent to help them bring a Stanley Cup in. This is interesting to me because I know I just mentioned everything kicks up during training camp. I don't see a world where Connor McDavid signs a contract extension until next offseason after the playoffs are done. I think that's a possibility, honestly.
I think if you get to the trade deadline and McDavid, what's the deadline to sign an extension until after the playoffs? Like you're eliminated from the playoffs? Is it New Year's or is it the trade deadline?
I think it's
most teams have an eternal cutoff date where they just won't bother with contract talks anymore until the off season. But the longer Conn McDavid goes without signing a contract extension, the more chatter you're going to hear. It's just not going to stop. It's if you thought last year with JT Miller and Elias Pettersson was annoying, that's all everyone was talking about for like 2 months, you are not ready to hear the media talking about Connor McDavid literally every single day.
You know what? The second that the Edmonton Oilers are no longer playing in the playoffs, you're like, okay, what's going on with Connor McDavid? It's going to be McDavid, 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 McDavid.
That's as it should be. I mean, has a player like that ever gotten to free agency? Ever?
No.
This would be like if Wayne Gretzky in the middle of his prime just became a UFA and any team in the league assigned him. This would be like when LeBron was a free agent for the first time. Teams are going to be sending private jets out to him and giving him the whole tour and giving him everything that he asked for just to hope that he considers them.
Buffalo, you hear me now? Fucking bring in Josh Allen, Brandon Bean. No, fuck Kevin Adams. Let's bring Brandon Bean in to do the negotiating.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, yeah.
And I know people are just like, oh, he's going to sign an extension. I know. I think he's going to sign an extension too. I'm just saying that if he, the longer he doesn't, the more you're going to get sick of hearing. We're going to have to talk about it because everyone's going to have to talk about it. It's Connor McDavid. Like, you can't not talk about him.
It will be a little bit more interesting than us having to talk about JT Miller and Elias Pettersson.
I was getting sick of that. Much, all the fucking drama.
At first, it was okay. Like, it was doing well. I did a clip out. It did really well. And then we got to, like, fucking January. And then
I think everyone's getting sick of it.
Yeah, we heard more rumors, like, different shit coming from it. It's like, oh, we got to talk about this, dude. And with Connor McDavid,
they would be settling down, and then something would flare up again. And you're like, "This again?
Yeah, come on." We would go like 1 week without talking about it. It's like, are we over this? And nope, we weren't until JT Miller finally got traded.
Yeah, I was so happy when that happened. I was like, "We don't have to fucking talk about this shit anymore. We're still sick of talking about Vancouver every fucking week."
Yeah, we were like running out of stuff to say about it. It was just the same shit over and over again, and it felt repetitive. There's one other team I want to bring up quickly. The Dallas Stars, I think they have a ton of pressure on them. And they're in the same boat as the Carolina Hurricanes where you have to get over the hump. If you face Edmonton in the second round, third round, you're going to have to go out and beat them. Because the last 2 years, you've gotten, let's call it how it is, fucking smacked outside of the first three games a couple of years ago. The Edmonton Oilers have played with their food with you. And you have a Stanley Cup team. A lot of people talk about you like one of the deeper rosters in the league. You have an elite goaltender and Ottinger, but you just can't find a way to get it done.
I mean, honestly, last year when they traded for Rantanen, I thought they were winning Stanley Cup.
When Rantanen went on that ridiculous run from like game four of the first round until like game three of the second round, during that, I'm like, there's no way Dallas doesn't make it to the finals.
Well, then he disappeared, right?
Yeah. 95% of his points came in that stretch. I think the last like eight games, he had no points.
Yeah, but after they made that trade for Rantanen, like, I remember, like, our first recording, I was like, I don't know what team is better than them. Like, their depth was fucking insane. Yeah. I know they gave up Stankova, and I think he's going to be a stud. He's already a really good fit in Carolina. It was really good for them in the playoffs. Well, one of the only players that actually showed up on a regular basis in the conference final for them. But, yeah, I mean, this team's still super deep. I don't think they really have any excuses not to go on another deep run. I think Edmonton will give them trouble, and I think the team to beat in the West is Vegas right now.
And this sucks because the last couple of years, I've not only been on Dallas bandwagon, but also I've been actually trying to have fun with my preseason cup picks. I picked New Jersey against Dallas last season. The year before, I think I actually picked Dallas and Carolina or something like that.
I think we both had Carolina in the cup final a couple of years ago. Yeah.
And of course, shit the bed. And this year, it doesn't feel like I'm going to have fun with it because you have two obvious clear teams that are the favorites right now in Vegas and Florida. And honestly, when they acquired Rantanen last year, I'm like, my fucking Dallas preseason pick, I've been riding with them. And then you know what was really fun? Because you picked Edmonton in the preseason, having Edmonton and Dallas face each other in the conference finals, like, we're fucking – we're like,
that was personal, man.
That was.
When Edmonton, like, every time I was watching the games whenever they scored, I was like, yeah, let's fucking go.
I remember when it wasn't against the Edmonton – well, I think there was a time in Edmonton where I was getting hyped, whatever, but against Colorado when the Dallas Stars went up 2-1 when they were down 1-0 in Game 7 – fucking acted like it was my goddamn team. When Johnson scored that goal, I was fucking hype. Yeah, but
I mean, it was something to cheer for, right?
That is true. I mean, that's what happens when the Sabres miss the playoffs.
The Edmonton thing with me, though, was personal because I was made fun of by multiple people. I remember when I picked them to win the first round, he's like, they're not fucking beating the Kings. They have no depth. They beat the Kings. They're not beating Vegas. The Vegas is so much better than them. They beat Vegas. They're not beating Dallas. Dallas is so much. Oh, they beat Dallas. They lost the Stanley Cup final because you picked them to win.
That's probably true, honestly. Like in the first round, like when McDavid ended up, I guess, willing his team in game one, and then they lost.
I thought they were done.
When they lost, I'm like, Yeah. I'm like, LA is winning this in game two when they kill Edmonton. Yeah. I'm like, it's fucking over.
After games one and two, I was like, they might get swept. Like, fuck.
And then game three happened, and Hiller makes that horrible fucking challenge. Yeah. It turned the series on its head, if we're being honest with you. And then
I still will say the Kings lost that series because of their coach.
I think so too.
I mean, after game three, Edmonton started to play a lot better, but just bad coaching decisions.
That's true. I will never forget when Zach Staden came on the pod for the first round predictions. Me and him are fucking clowning you for picking.
Oh, I know.
I didn't see them killing Vegas like how they did either.
I thought that was going to be a really close series. I was shocked when that went five. It should have been four.
Yeah, Draisaitl scored on himself. Yeah,
it should have been a four-game series.
It should have. And then... yeah, Edmonton kind of killed everybody, for being honest with you, after those two games or something. They went on a stretch where they were like 10-1. Oh, yeah.
Game one in the Stanley Cup final when they won, I was like, I don't think they're winning at all. And then Florida's just too good, man. They're so deep. They make such good adjustments. Mm-hmm. Bobrovsky's so solid in the net. They just don't make mistakes.
They don't. And it's so hard. Like, even because, a team
– like, when Edmonton beat LA, did they beat? I thought they outplayed them later in the series, but they got back into that because LA kept making mistakes. Vegas kept making mistakes. Dallas kept making mistakes. Florida doesn't make mistakes. The only game where I thought they were actually bad is when they blew that huge lead in game four. That was the only game where I was like, oh, Florida, fuck that game up.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. Last but not least, in today's episode, I'm going to have you do a little quick fire of over under. Player season total, point totals, if you're cool with that.
Sure.
Okay, so we have Cale Makar over under 87.5 points.
Over, I think I'll have 90.
I don't hate that. Clayton Keller over under 84.5.
Under.
Jack Hughes over under 84.5.
Over.
Rasmus Dahlin over under 69.5.
That's a tough one.
That is.
I think he gets in the 70s this year. I'll take the over.
Yeah. Matt Boldy over under 72.5.
I'm going to say under. I think he's at 70.
I look at Boldy. The last two are very hard, but I think Boldy can get into the 75-point range. But
I agree. He's somewhere in the 70s. So that 72 is – did you make those numbers up, or did you give him
No, these are straight from DraftKings.
Yeah, those are pretty good. Yeah, I could tell this from a sports book. Those are pretty good numbers.
They're pretty good. I would stay away from the – honestly, I would stay away from all of those, if we're being honest with you.
The only one I would feel a little okay with is Dahlin, but any of the other ones, I was like – that's like spot on where I think they like, hit.
I know Cale Makar is the best offensive defenseman in the league by far, but like 87.5, like it's not every day that a defenseman gets 88 points.
Yeah, if I had to bet money, I'd probably take the under.
Yeah, if I had to bet money on any of these, if I was placing a bet right now, I would go Makar under, Clayton Keller under, Jack Hughes over, Rasmus Dahlin over, Matt Boldy under. That's what I would
think. Boldy, that 72, man, that's a really good number.
That is tough.
Yeah, because I think he's going to be somewhere in the 70s.
Like, he had 70 points this season.
Yeah.
Or 69, whatever it was. I think it was straight on
70. I think he could be an 80-plus point player, too. I think he'll keep getting better. But, like, yeah, that's a tough number, man. Fuck. Like, fucking gamble, man. They know this shit. It's so rigged, man. It's so rigged.
Like, hear me out. If Kaprizov is fully healthy this season, he plays 70-plus games, Matt Boldy is going to hit the over. But the only issue is having the health of him and Eriksson Ek. That's just me, though. That's going to end it for today's episode. If you guys enjoy all of our content, all of our socials are down below, as well as the subscribe button. New episodes are every single Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern, and we'll see you guys in our next episode.